This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. It's our great pleasure now to welcome to have a chat with us Michelle Grattan, a journalist of many, many years standing and writes for The Conversation and a whole lot of other platforms. Good morning, Michelle. How are you today?
Hi there. Glad to see the end of the political year, more or less, I must say, but doing well.
It is. So, Tass.
Thank you, Macca. And Michelle, also good morning from myself, and it's great to have you back on the airwaves. It has been quite a year in many respects, but from everything I see and read, the political year has really been a very challenging year and a very agitated year as well. Given, do you mind giving our listeners your report card on Scott Morrison and his government's performance for 2021?
It's obviously been a difficult year for the government and the Prime Minister in terms of trying to manage the pandemic. If you think back a year, we were all believing that this year would in fact be the year of putting the pandemic behind us. But in fact, that didn't happen and it's still with us. And with a new variant now, it could be with us for a very long time. So I think that the vaccine rollout was obviously poorly handled in the earlier stages. The performance has picked up recently, and now, of course, we have very high levels of vaccination, and that's great. But nevertheless, that earlier performance was pretty inadequate, and if the pandemic performance is reviewed at any stage, I think there'll be quite a lot of criticism of the planning of the rollout in the early stages. Scott Morrison personally has lost a good deal of skin, I think, through the perception that he's loose with the truth. And, of course, the whole incident with the French really sharpened that criticism and had people concentrating on his character. And as he goes into the election year, that is a negative for him. This week, as we come close to Christmas, we've had a very upbeat update of the budget. That is good for the government. It's relying on its economic record and its economic credentials as its main platform going into the election. So to sum up, in terms of the government, I think a very mixed year and one that it'll look back on and think the performance could have been better, but it won't admit that. The other thing I'd say about it is that it's left a number of things unsettled and hanging, most notably the whole issue of integrity. The Integrity Commission was promised, not delivered, and of course, in the end, Scott Morrison wouldn't even introduce the legislation on what I think was the spurious grounds that Labor didn't support his model. So that's an outstanding issue, and that'll be important in the election campaign. Also, religious discrimination, to put it more accurately, that bill is now being examined by committees, but that issue again is outstanding and much contested, and quite a few people in the government and outside the government would think that it had been unwise to go down that path anyway.
With relation to that bill, how it impacts on the Rainbow community, Michelle, Do you have any feel where you think this is going to land? Is the government, I mean, I know the Prime Minister is serious about this bill, but do you actually think it's a bill that his party, or the Liberal Party, particularly feels comfortable passing? Where do you think it might land?
I think a number of the backbenchers prefer not to be having this debate, not to have to deal with this issue when they've got so many other political arguments for the election. The Rainbow community, of course, has been critical of the bill, and I think that it would be very surprising if this legislation gets through before the election. I think there'll be just too much opposition, Senate problems, debate about it in the community, and no time. Because even assuming a May election, and it's always possible Scott Morrison goes in March, but let's assume a May election, which he seems to prefer, you've only got a few days of Parliament. And I can't see this getting done in those few days. Might be wrong, but that's my feeling.
That's a great segue into our next question, Michelle, which is, what do you believe will be the key issues that the government will wish to debate and take into the election?
Economy, economy, economy. I think that the government's argument will be, we've brought you through the pandemic, even despite some problems that I mentioned with the vaccination program, we have come through strongly on the health front and on the economic front, as we've seen from yesterday's figures. Sorry, I might say that again. As we've seen from this week's figures. And so the government will be saying, essentially, when you're on a good thing in terms of the economy, stick to it. Don't risk Labor. So it'll be painting Labor as a danger.
So on this issue around the coming election, do you think that the so-called voices of style independence will actually have a dint or have an impact on this election at all?
It's very hard for independents to get elected, so I wouldn't be seeing some great influx of new independents. Of course, there are some there already, and most of those will be re-elected. But in terms of the ones that are standing afresh, the contest in Wentworth will be particularly interesting because that is a very, very close seat, and a seat which is pretty independently minded, if I can put it like that. And that should mean that the independent there has a reasonable chance. But I would think one, at the most two, and they'd be pretty lucky to get two. But
Do you mean two in addition to what we have now, or
that's
two?
Right.
Oh,
that's
I
right.
See.
And don't forget, they won't all be re-elected because Craig Kelly is now an independent, and he won't be elected unless he performed some
miracle
from his point of view. But I think that in the campaign they will make a difference because they will highlight issues such as integrity, in particular climate, of course, as well, and women's issues. So they'll be significant in the campaign, but the results for them may not reflect that campaign significance.
I want to ask, Michelle, a slight change of tack. You've been a journalist for a very long time, and you know you've worked in the press gallery, you've headed the bureau there. How have you seen the press gallery change over decades, and what are the biggest changes you've seen in how the press gallery operates?
I think we've got to see it more widely in terms of not only the press gallery changes, but media generally and how it's changed, and politics, and I guess society. Obviously, when I started in the early 70s in the press gallery, television was significant, but nothing like as important as it later became. And now, of course, the politicians frame their campaigning around television pictures. If they're going to announce something, they're going to announce a childcare policy, they've got to get to a place where there are children.
Yes.
And if they're going to announce a health policy, a vaccine initiative, whatever, they'll get to some research institute and go to hospitals and so forth. So pictures are dominant. I think that in more recent times, the growth of social media has changed how politics is done and has meant that the legacy media, the traditional media, has much more and different sort of competition. And of course, the legacy media has also gone digital, as well as the old print outlets. So that's a big change. The other thing I'd mention is the faster pace of politics and the news cycle, the so-called 24-hour news cycle. And we've seen particular television stations, of course, devoted just to news, as it were. So those, I think, have been among the significant changes.
I wonder if, Michelle, you could just unpack a little bit more the impacts of social media, because one of the things that I keep on hearing is that a number of politicians love social media because they can control the message that they deliver to their community and their constituents. So it gives them a greater level of control. But we are also hearing about the negative sides of social media. Did you have a feel for that or a view on that?
Well, I think both those things are right. The ability of social media to enable them to target particular groups and their own electorates and to get out their own messages directly and to get out more messages, because, for example, backbenchers are going to struggle to get a lot of attention in the mainstream media, although these news channels do give them more opportunity than they had in the past. But nevertheless, if they've got a big social media presence, they can put out stuff all the time and show you what they're doing and where they're going, and of course they do that a lot. But of course, as we know, social media has coarsened the political debate, the trolling, the insults, the ability of people to say almost anything, and the attention that a lot of people give to politics via social media in a very negative way, I think, has had a detrimental effect. And it's interesting that now we're seeing government turn to this issue of how you somehow put a restraint on what's coming over social media. They couch it in terms of people worrying about their children and individuals, being women in particular, being under attack and so on. But it has coincided also, I must say, with the politicians themselves feeling that they're under attack from trolls and so forth. And therefore, there's a bit of self-interest involved here, not just interest in what's happening to other people.
Right. Our final question, Michelle. You've been around, you know, Parliament, you've been around politicians a very long time, and obviously a lot of the time, you know, a lot of the information you get is background information, you know, from policy advisers, from media people, you know, in the parliamentary offices. Just how has the role of those advisers in parliamentary offices, how has that changed over the years? Has it changed for the better, or do you think it's they've become even more political?
I think that there's been obviously an immense growth in their power, and this has reflected in part the fact that the ministerial offices these days are much, much better staffed in terms of numbers than they used to be, and they have more, comparatively more political people rather than just people seconded from departments. I think that ministers tend to look to and trust their staff in a way that they often don't trust the bureaucrats. In some cases they do, but often because they're working cheek by jowl with their own staff, because in some cases they've worked with them for years, they've known them well, they're political operatives in many instances, these people tend to have a great deal of influence. And you do notice that ministers sort of use them as a crutch.
Yes.
In terms of the media staff. They feel very uncomfortable, as though they don't have their clothes on, if they go out to a function and they don't have a press secretary there with them. It's quite an interesting phenomenon. So overall, I think that the growth of ministerial staff, political staff, has diminished and made difficult the role of the public service, the bureaucratic advisers.
Michelle, we're almost out of time, but you did mention earlier on that you think that Scott Morrison will prefer to have the election in May. When do you think he'll call the election? Based on everything that you've observed and everything that you know and what you know of the man and the party, where do you think he'll throw the dice?
Look, don't hold me to this in 6 months' time.
Of course I won't.
It's always very difficult to predict.
We're all speculating, of course.
His present preference is to have that budget, which has been set for March 29, and to use that budget to frame the election campaign, and then you would have a May election. Now, the alternative is he comes back after Australia Day, things look better for the government, and he goes then for a March election. But certainly at the moment, the thinking seems to be frame the election with a budget.
Yes.
And of course, that's what happened last time. It went well for him last time. It didn't go so well for Malcolm Turnbull in 2016 when he framed an election with a budget. But certainly I think at this instant, that's Scott Morrison's thinking.
Great. We are out of time, Michelle. Thank you so much for making yourself available again. It's great to speak to you. Our listeners really appreciate your insight. I want to wish you to have a lovely break. I hope you do get to have a break. And we look forward to speaking to you again in the new year.
And to you, have a good Christmas, and to the listeners as well.
Thank you so much.
Best
wishes for the season.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.